health, wellness, fitness, relationships, and everything in between. We're removing the taboo from what really matters in midlife. I'm your host, Michelle Folan, and this is Asking for a Friend. I just love it when we get to talk about skincare, and it's always wonderful when we get to chat with an expert who understands midlife skin, the inside-out connection, and the importance of overall wellness. Lisette Manuel is a clinical esthetician, a wellness coach, and the author of the book, Prepare to Pause. Welcome to Asking for a Friend, Lisette Manuel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to meet you. And
you too.
I did give you a brief introduction, but I'd love to know if you'd like to fill in anything that I may have missed.
Well, yeah, that was pretty good. I've been a clinical esthetician for almost 36 years and worked in the spa industry with plastic surgeons, you know, kind of all the things. And I'm also a nutrition coach and recently a new author. So a lot going on.
We will talk about the book because I think the book is kind of neat because it does tie in your 30 plus years of, you know, being in aesthetics and then your focus on nutrition. So we will get there. But I think it'd be fun to also share your career path and kind of how your interests and service offerings have kind of come full circle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I took my course in 1988, the traditional aesthetic course with all the things, the nails, the waxing, the hair removal, the facials. And over the years, worked in different areas from, you know, in a shopping mall sort of setting to spas to private owned beauty suites with a plastic surgeon. So it's kind of evolved. Like any job, you kind of niche out in things that you tend to like more. So when I opened my business in 2008, that's what I wanted to do. So I kind of got tired of doing certain things. And it's a career that can be hard on the body physically. So bent over doing toenails and waxing and things like that. Because I love my career and I wanted to do it for a very long time. So to protect my neck and shoulders and back. And so I just, you know, kind of niched out and evolved. And I've always been interested in more of the wellness aspect and the medical aspect as well. So I took some extra trainings and just slowly worked on a business plan to kind of transform and integrate the things that I wanted to do and slowly phase out the things that I did not want to do. And here I am. So now I specialize in predominantly in skincare, this is what I do all day long, and cosmetic tattooing. So I don't do any of the nails and the waxing and these things anymore. And then a few years ago, I took some training in nutrition to incorporate that because what you eat does affect your skin greatly. And especially conditions like acne or eczema and psoriasis and inflammatory skin conditions is very much related to the gut. So I wanted to dig deeper into that to be able to help my clients further. And I deal with mostly 30, 35 plus, so kind of middle-aged premenopausal women where things are starting to shift. And sometimes that requires a bit of a lifestyle change as well.
You know, I immediately went to how do I make my skin look better now? But if you're working with women who are 35 years old, it can be that, hey, how do you want to look when you're 60? Mm-hmm. And it is the some of the lifestyle choices that we make. And I do like the fact that you do embrace this inside out philosophy. So in regard to nutrition, what are the best foods for our skin?
There's a couple of things because first is protein. And as we age, particularly around menopause time and beyond, women need to increase their protein. And of course, protein is what builds tissue and collagen and your muscle tone and all of that. And then to build collagen, you need a lot of vitamin C. So your fruits and vegetables, your antioxidant, super important on so many levels because you have the micronutrients in the fruits and vegetables. So those are your various vitamins and minerals, and then fiber and protein, just things so that your digestive system is well balanced and you flush things out well, and the healthy fats. So women our age are so scared of eating fat, right? We were from that mentality of the 80s, and everything was low fat, and like we cringe at eating nuts or avocados and things like that. So that is very important, particularly if you live in a cold climate country like here in Canada. The cold weather and the heating is very, very drying on skin. So incorporating fats such as nuts and seeds and avocados and oily fish like mackerel and salmon, those are all things that helps to moisturize your skin from the inside out and helps to lower the inflammation in the body and the skin as well. So that would probably be, you know, it's a well-rounded diet.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people out there that are eliminating certain food groups, you know, because they're doing whatever diet is in style, or fruit is bad, it makes you fat, it increases your blood sugar. There's no real proof of that. And I mean, humans are biologically designed to eat fruits and vegetables. We need those to live and for our body to function optimally. So I'm a big advocate for that.
And I think too, Lisette, that it's really the added sugars in our diet.
Exactly.
We all know the bananas have more sugar than, say, a raspberry, but it's that added sugar of the venti latte from Starbucks.
Those little candies here and there.
Sure. And those are easy desserts to sneak in to our diets for sure. Mm-hmm. What about foods that we shouldn't eat? What are things that are counterintuitive to having good skin?
Well, sugar, because we were just talking about that. When you eat processed sugar, and that can be table sugar, sweets, candy, but also processed carbohydrates like white bread, white rice, chips, that sort of thing, right? So that raises your blood sugar and insulin, and it creates something called glycation into the skin. So it bonds to the collagen and elastin, and it ages your skin very, very quickly. And that can also be alcohol, because alcohol is sugar. So you can tell people that drink a lot when they hit a certain age. I don't even have to ask if they drink, because I can see it in their skins. It does something to the skin. The lower part of the face gets like the texture changes, and the lines and wrinkles are very, very deeply grooved, and there's a certain loss of elasticity. I mean, this happens naturally with aging as well, but it's much accelerated on, I'm going to say women, but people, because men too, that eat a high sugar, high alcohol, you know, sort of diet. And then, of course, it creates inflammation.
We talk a lot on this podcast about alcohol. It just comes up a lot because it's hot out there. And I always say, I know it's a very unpopular opinion to say no amount of alcohol is good for you, but you know, when you start talking about, right, we know for our insides it's inflammatory, but when you start talking about women's skin and it being detrimental to your skin, you might get some people listening.
It's one of the, you know, people will give up all sorts of things, you know, they're in their diet and lifestyle, but man, that's a hard one for people to give up.
It sure is. And I hear it. I'm not insensitive to that. You were talking about vitamin C and making sure you're getting vitamin C in your diet, because obviously we do use vitamin C on our skin. Do vitamin C supplements? So if you're taking, you know, a vitamin C tablet every day, is that a good thing to add to your diet?
It can be if you're really not eating enough in your diet. The best source is always food, because the bioavailability of it, you absorb it better, you digest it better. Supplements can help, but sometimes, like if you take too much vitamin C, you're just going to pee it out anyway, right? Like you can only hold a certain amount. So people that have maybe allergies or for whatever reason cannot eat enough in their diet naturally, yes. And you can add supplement from time to time as a little insurance policy. But the thing with supplements, sometimes people rely on them so much and they forget to eat the real thing, right? But it can have some benefits. A lot of collagen powders have it added into the formula because they work together. So it helps with the absorption and the production of collagen. So it can have a place, but extremely high percentages or, you know, milligrams of it, sometimes you don't need as much as you think you do.
Okay.
So it's something to discuss with your physician as well, or your pharmacist, if you're not sure if you need it or what to take. Because a lot of people take it like, oh, it's cold and flu season, I'm going to up my vitamin C, right? So it can, but you're better off adding an extra portion of fruits and vegetables in your diet rather than taking a supplement.
All right. That's great advice. You keep just segueing right into my next topic that I had on my list. If they ask you, I was going to ask you about collagen, and I have heard every opinion about collagen. And so it runs the gamut. I always say, now I've been taking collagen for years. And now I'm at that point, I joke, I say, well, I'm not going to stop taking collagen now because I'm afraid some body part of mine will fall off if I stop taking it. What are your thoughts on collagen? And should we add that to our diet?
Like you said, it is controversial. The latest studies is starting to show that, yes, it is having an impact. And honestly, if you think about ancient humans, like how we used to eat, you know, way back in the caveman days, we ate every part of the animal. People would eat the skin and the ligaments and things like that. The eyes, like I've seen my grandmother do it many times, you know, she'd eat the eyeballs of the salmon. But the whole low-fat society of the 80s, take the skin off your chicken and all this stuff, that's where the collagen lives. It's in that skin. You know when you roast a turkey or a chicken and you put it in the fridge and that jelly in the bottom of your pan, that's collagen. And it's also used to make things like Jell-O, but, you know, that's not the best source. So right. It's something that, you know, we're kind of designed to eat. And with our modern society, it kind of phased out of our natural diets. So you can get it that way. But then, you know, you're getting the fat, which some people are concerned with animal fat. If you're eating the skin off your chicken and off your fish, and eating fish skin is not really palatable for most people. So with that being said, a supplement can give you that component of your diet that's naturally missing. It's not going to be like overnight that you're like a facelift, you know, you're not going to have a new face, but it has an impact on your skin, on your nails, on your hair, as well as your joints and ligaments. So depending on the type of collagen, whether it's from fish or bovine and what else is in it. And you know, I always try to get like the purest, most organic source without all the bells and whistles. And I personally prefer a powder that you can mix in liquids. It seems to be more bioavailable and more easily digestible. If you take a collagen in a pill form, before your body processes all of that, you're probably not getting much, right? So I take a brand that is locally made here, not too far from where I live, actually. And it's wild-caught fish, and the way that it's processed, it's very organic and clean, and they don't add flavorings and things like that. So like you said, I've been taking it for years, and I find sometimes, you know, we get busy and we forget, and I feel it in my joints when I stop immediately, you know, within weeks.
That's my thing. It's really my joints. And yeah. If I don't take it, that's probably the first thing I notice. So I appreciate you saying that, because I didn't know if that was all in my head.
No. And my clients that start it, you know, that are new at it, usually nails and hair is what they notice more, how fast it's growing and how much, you know, healthier, and the nails get harder, the hair gets stronger. Skin takes a bit of more time because your body absorbs it in different ways, and it's a large organ. So it can take a few months of taking it consistently before you start noticing in your skin. But it does. And when I do certain treatments like microneedling, or where the skin needs to heal and rebuild, I often get my clients to take collagen doing those treatments as well. And it seems to have a quicker response.
Okay. No, and thank you for your thoughts on collagen because...
But it's evolving, right? The research is always evolving and they could find something else next year. And like it gets better and better with technology. They're formulating it differently and easier. So I think it's one of those supplements that's probably going to stay around for a while.
They'll have to pry it out of my cold dead hands probably because I'm not going to stop taking it now. I would like to talk about face products. Mm-hmm. And you being an esthetician and with your years of experience, if you had to choose just three face products, what would they be?
Hyaluronic acid is pretty high on my list. So that is a molecule that we naturally have in our body or something we naturally have in our body. It's a type of sugar. The fun thing about that is that it can hold 1,000 times its weight in water. So each molecule, think of it as microscopic sponges. So when you put that on your skin, it sucks up water from the air and it's recommended to put it on damp skin. So it's going to take the water that's on your skin and hold it there for hours and hours. So it has a nice plumping effect, a nice kind of calming effect on skin that's very dry, irritated, or sensitive. It can come in different formulas because that's what's in an injectable. You know, when you get your lips injected or your cheeks, it's usually hyaluronic acid. So it's a kind of natural sort of ingredient, but it has so many benefits. The next one would be vitamin C, as we spoke earlier, internally, super important, but externally, what it does, it's an antioxidant, as we know, and a lot of people hear this word, but they don't necessarily understand what it means. So antioxidant is a fancy name for rust. So if you leave your bicycle outside in the rain for weeks and weeks or months and months or years or your cars, things will rust. But our body has similar things. So as we age, we get the dreaded little brown spots, right? Like the sun damage, the age spots, sunspot, whatever you want to call it. So that in a sense is rust. So free radicals are particles that are all around us in the air that attack our body. That's what ages our body. It ages fruits and vegetables. It ages your house. It ages your car. It's everywhere. So an antioxidant found in particular vitamins like vitamin C, vitamin E, it's like a shield. It blocks it. So the easiest example that I often give my clients, what do you use to keep your fruit salad from turning brown? If you cook at all, right? If you're chopping up apples, particularly, and bananas, and we know that within 20 minutes, they turn brown.
You use citrus.
Exactly. So ascorbic acid is the type of vitamin C that's found in lemon juice or any type of citrus. This is often what's in the skincare formulas. So when you're putting those serums or creams on your skin, it's the equivalent of putting the lemon juice on your apple slices to keep them white. So it has a lightening effect on the spots that are there, but it's more so as a preventative and ideally to use it in the daytime under a sunblock because as you're walking around, you know, being exposed to all these free radicals and sun, you know, UVA, UVB rays, it's that shield that is on your skin. And it also has an impact on collagen production as well. And then after that would be as far as like all-purpose ingredients that for any skin type, because there are a lot of good things. It's hard, that was a hard choice to make. And then it would be probably like a very nourishing type of cream, something like that has shea butter or squalene, like an oil, because as we age, our skin gets very dry and just a little light lotion sometimes is not enough. Squalene is actually an oil taken from shark liver. So it penetrates very well and it's very, very well absorbed by the skin. Shea butter is from a nut, like it's a nut type of butter. Cocoa butter is another one. So something, ingredients that bring oil and acts like a barrier protection for skin. Because after menopause, the skin gets very, very dry and water evaporates easier. So you want to have things that is going to seal all of that in and moisturize and repair the skin.
I have a vitamin C serum that has a squalene mm-hmm. base, and it feels so yummy.
It's really nice. It's a rich oil, but it's not sticky or greasy.
No, it does not leave my face sticky or greasy looking, but it's so easy to apply. It's so lovely. And it's made by Womaness. I had the co-founder of the company on my show. I met her at an event. I went immediately and got some of that vitamin C, and I've been using it. I absolutely love it. A couple things. So you didn't mention retinol or retinoids, and I was wondering what your thoughts are about using those.
I have a love-hate relationship with retinol.
Okay. I'd love to hear this.
It is one of the actual proven ingredients that has an anti-aging effect on the skin. It does change the molecular structure of the cells, the skin in the cells, but it's very strong. I personally, I've tried everything. Like I have a hard time using it. I look like I have eczema all over my face. It makes me itchy. It was first and foremost designed for acne, right? Because it's a vitamin A derivative. And we know that people that have acne will often be prescribed Accutane, which is an oral medication for acne. So the retinol is a derivative of those vitamin A. So there's different formulas, different percentages, different strength, time release, you know, encapsulated, all these different formulas. So it's kind of, you have to do a little bit of trial and error, but there is a protocol to start using it. So you have to use it very slow, like once a week for the first month, and then you build to twice a week. And, you know, we'd start with a low, maybe 0.03, and then go up to a 1.0 and things like that. So it's not something I just recommend for everybody, because some skins, if you have, example, rosacea, can't tolerate, or very, very thin skin, usually have a hard time with it. So there are other things that can do a similar effect. So I prefer to do a treatment like microneedling or something like that. That's going to give you this similar firming and collagen induction with less side effects. But I have some clients that tolerate it really well and do very well, and they can use it every day with no problem and seeing really good results. So I'm hesitant to just put it out there for everybody, because some people are not great candidates for it. So that's why it wasn't on my top list.
I was curious. I was like, oh, she didn't mention retinols. And I've had some dermatologists and estheticians say retinol, but I see where you're coming from. There are, when it's really cold out,
I find it's overprescribed.
Yeah. Well, and I can say just from personal experience, and I know one of my sisters says this too, if it's really cold out and your skin's already dry, it just adds insult to injury. So it may not be something that I would use every single day, but I do use it, but I use I let it sit for a minute, and then I hit it with a really heavy moisturizer because
of that. You need to put it on clean, dry skin only at night and wait a 10 to 15 minute before applying other creams. And in cold weather, definitely you need those barrier creams we were talking about earlier with the squalanes or ceramides, or, you know, a thicker kind of oilier to prevent that transepidermal water loss that can occur.
Yeah. So I like that you mentioned to use the retinol on dry, clean skin and then wait, let it do its job before you add anything on top of that, which is great advice. The other thing is you mentioned using hyaluronic acid, maybe even on damp skin to really capitalize on that moisture. And then would you do the vitamin C over that?
Yeah, it depends on the formula. So you want to use your lightest, most water-based products first. So let's say your vitamin C is combined with vitamin E perhaps, or squalene, where it's in an oilier formula, then you would use your hyaluronic acid definitely first, because you want to do the water-based stuff first and work your way up to the thicker, oilier based. If your vitamin E is liquid, like in a dropper form, let's say, and it's very watery, there's no oil in it as well or at all, then you could do that first.
Okay.
And then on, while that's still kind of damp, put your hyaluronic acid on top, or either or. So it really depends on the formula that you're using.
Did you mean, say, vitamin C or vitamin E?
Vitamin C. But a lot of vitamin C serums are combined with a vitamin E because you're getting two oxidants.
Okay.
So some serums or creams have both.
Okay.
So, but vitamin E, as we know, is oily, right? It's an oil-based vitamin. Because if you open the little capsules, it's oil, right? We tend to put that on scars and things like that. But vitamin C is water soluble. So it just depends what is combined in your product and what you have. And this is something that I see pretty much every day in my clinic. Women use stuff and they don't know what they're using and what it's for. They just buy whatever the sales clerk told them to buy or their friend at their, you know, their thing. It's important to look at the ingredients on your bottle of potion or cosmetic or whatever you have and know what you're using it for and why. Because certain serums are designed for daytime, some are designed for nighttime, some are designed for a short period of time, not year round. So there's a lot. And, you know, I've had clients come in and they're using five different serums from five different brands. So there can be interaction there chemically. Either they neutralize each other or they can cause irritation and reactions because there are chemicals and the pH and all these little intricate details. It's important to know how and what and why, I guess. This is where estheticians come in and we coach and guide our clients. But when you just buy things online or at the store on your by yourself, sometimes you're not sure. And some products don't even have the ingredients and the instructions on it, right? Or it's on the box and you threw that away 2 months ago and now your bottle is like, oh, what was this for again? So the steps, it depends on the formula. Yeah.
Are you going to weigh in on red light therapy on these masks? What do you think of those?
Oh, yes. That is my favorite gadget. I use it consistently in my treatment room. I have the professional, you know, the big panels with different settings and different lights. And I also do retail the face ones for my clients. Yes, there are a few contraindications. So, of course, pregnancy, right? And breastfeeding because your hormones are unstable at that time. And a lot of pregnant ladies develop melasma, which is sensitive to heat and light. So we don't like to, and nobody wants to test these things on pregnant ladies. So as with all skincare and beauty things, we say no to that. Secondly, if you're on a lot of photosensitive medication and, you know, antibiotics or certain anti-anxiety, antidepressants, hormones, birth control. There's a lot of drugs that usually have a warning label too. It's mostly for the sun. But let's say you're on four of those. It could make your skin a little more sensitive with those lights. You just have to use with caution, right? And or if you have epilepsy, let's say, because some of them blink. So you're getting this constant flashing in your eyes. So you have to be careful with that. But otherwise, pretty much any skin type can benefit. There's different colors that has different actions. And red is kind of like the all-purpose, right? It treats inflammation, redness. It increases collagen. It helps with healing. It helps with bruising. So if you've had injections or any work done on your face, I usually bring them in to, you know, help to accelerate some of that healing. If you are using retinol and active ingredients like that, do not put it on immediately before putting your red light. So you would use this on clean, dry skin first and then put your active ingredients afterwards because it can accelerate the effect of something like retinol or salicylic acids or certain glycolic acid, that sort of thing. So it can kind of make your product work a bit stronger, which is not always a good thing. But yes, big advocate for those. They're proven to work. You know, it's an old technology that was developed by NASA like over 50 years ago. So there is the data to prove that it does have an effect on tissue.
Okay, good. And then my other question, how often should we exfoliate? And is it okay to use a washcloth on our face?
It depends on the skin type and the age of the person. If you're young, your skin naturally renews itself every 28 days or so. But as we age, it can be 40 to 50 days, right? That process slows down. So if there's no sensitivity, like inflammation from acne, you know, or really flared up rosacea, lupus, those sorts of things, you have to be careful because it can irritate. And the weather, so winter's cold weather, you would exfoliate a bit less. People think more because, oh, my skin is dry, I'm just going to scrub it off, but it can actually make things worse. So on a normal skin, normal situation, once to twice a week is plenty. But if you're using products that exfoliate, right? We're talking here mechanical exfoliation from like a scrub or a brush or one of those loofah mitts. But sometimes you get an exfoliant that's in a product such as alpha hydroxy acids and salicylics and retinol itself. So those are very potent natural exfoliants. So if you're using those daily, there's really no need to be doing a scrub twice a week on top of that because it's kind of overkill. But if you're not using anything like that, then yes, once or twice a week at the most, not daily. I'm not a fan of cleansers that have like a daily exfoliant and plus doing a weekly scrub and doing this and doing that. It's too much. We're disrupting the natural microbiome of the skin, and it can lead to a condition called TEWE, T-E-W-E. Yes, stands for transepidermal water loss, where you think of your skin as having a saran wrap, right, that holds all the water and all the nutrients. When you overexfoliate, that saran wrap becomes full of holes, and then water evaporates too quickly. And then you start getting conditions like irritation and dryness and itching and sensitivities. So it's a very complex organ. So I'm a less is more type of girl. I find as a whole, what I see on the internet and particularly Instagram, there's too much stuff going on, over exfoliation.
Okay.
Depends where you live, on your climate and your age and a lot of things. But a washcloth, to getting back to your question, doesn't really exfoliate. And I'm not a big fan of those for the face because you have residue from fabric softener and you have scented. People use all these scented things in their laundry. So that's going into your skin. So I prefer to use cleansing sponges or something designed that you just use for your face, on your face. A lot of these little microfiber cloths or sponges that is just more sanitary. And you want to exfoliate in a controlled manner. And a lot of those scrubs have vitamins and hydrating things like hyaluronic acid. So you're getting, you're exfoliating, but you're also getting treatment on your skin. While if you just use like a washcloth or a brush, you can do it, but
okay,
why not use, you know, something that's going to add more to it as well?
Okay. You do cosmetic tattooing. Mm-hmm. And I checked out the photos on your website, which are really amazing. If a client's coming to you, what most often are you doing in regard to cosmetic tattooing?
It depends on the season. Eyebrows are probably the most requested of all the things that I tattoo. And the last couple of years, you know, everything eyebrows has exploded. So it's super popular. And a lot of women, as they age, will get bald spots, thinning. Sometimes it's caused by medication where they're losing their eyebrows, stress, alopecia, all these things. So that kind of is like the top of all the tattooing I do. And then, you know, I also do more like like eyeliner and lips, it's more cosmetic. Eyebrows, it's kind of more of a need. You know, I don't have eyebrows. I need eyebrows. And then my favorite thing to do, though, is nipples and areolas. But it depends, right? I have like spring and fall seems to be the eyebrow tattoo just goes because you have to avoid the sun while it's healing. You can't swim. You can't travel. There's a bit of downtime, right? So my clients tend to kind of pick seasonal times where there's not much going on for the healing process and for the ink to have time to heal properly and set. Not a best situation in the summertime when you're swimming or on a boat or, you know, but it can vary. And with the areolas, that's usually can most of the time breast cancer reconstruction, but also scar camouflage from breast reductions where there's been necrosis of the nipple and there's scarring and disfiguration, and just to kind of even things out. So there's a lot of different situations where I would be tattooing nipples and areolas. And then I do a bit of scar camouflage and things like that. So it just
depends. Neat. I didn't even think about camouflaging scars, but that's fascinating.
That's a flat white scar, but sometimes facelift patients, you know, they'll have that telltale scar around the ear and around the hairline. So we just do a little bit to blend that in and make it a bit less noticeable. But it doesn't work for all types of scars. It's very particular for that.
Okay. And the photos that I saw, the areolas and the nipple tattooing that you do are absolutely amazing, by the way. You are so talented. How gratifying is it for you to help restore women's confidence a bit and help them feel whole after having major breast surgery like that?
It's extremely gratifying. It is probably one of my favorite things to do. Because the artist in me likes every client is different, right? So I'm never going to be drawing the same thing. Eyebrows are eyebrows. Like there's some variations, but with this, especially when I'm trying to match the other side, let's say it's a unilateral mastectomy. So I'm trying to match the real color and shaping in it. So it's more challenging for me that way. And the look on their faces, even when they come for a consultation, I have these little stick-on tattoos. You use a wet cloth and like the Cracker Jack tattoos we used to.
Yeah.
So they can try it out a little bit before. So I usually will put those on during their consult and I say, go home and live with that for a few days, see how you feel. And just when I put those stickers on, they go to the mirror and the tears come out. Immediately, usually.
So, yeah.
And for me,
like you're getting choked up right now because you see the emotional scars.
I do.
Of them
it
not.
Takes away,
yeah.
It takes away from this. I mean, every scar is different. It depends on the surgery and what was done. But that's all they see, right? That's all they see is their scars. So when you tattoo the nipple and it takes away, you know, you're just stepping out of the shower, you glance at yourself, you look more normal, I guess, more whole. And just that is such a,
yeah.
I can't explain it how gratifying it is, but.
Yeah, that gets you out of bed in the morning, right? That kind of stuff, knowing that you are making that kind of an impact on someone's life. And that's very heartwarming.
It's not something that I had heard of or planned of when I started my career, but it kind of fell in my lap. And I immediately was attracted to that, right? So as soon as I I took my training, as soon as I heard about it, and just been honing my skills ever since, I guess.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Lisette, I would love to talk about your book. The book is called Prepare to Pause. What prompted you to write it? And who did you write it for?
It was one of those things that wasn't planned at all. I'm very in tune with the universe and, you know, I'm a bit holistic that way. And I find things happen for a reason. But it started out as being a pamphlet because I do consultations and the same questions arise, the same conversations. So I thought, and I would usually kind of recap everything and send an email, but it's a lot of work, right? So I thought, what if I have like a nice little bullet point pamphlet to give out to my clients and, you know, take notes on. And when they get home, they can read it and kind of remember what we discussed. And so I just started putting ideas together on my laptop. And, you know, as thoughts would come up and questions, and I would go write and add and add. And it just, there was just too much. And then it just started to flow out of my brain. And first thing, I had 10 chapters written. And then it evolved into kind of being a bit of my own story because I had and still having quite a difficult menopause. I can't take any hormone therapy because I had a pulmonary embolism a few years ago. So I can't take anything. And I found the writing very therapeutic. The worst of my menopause really hit me the first year of that pandemic. It was a rough ride. And then it kind of opened conversation and women are so scared to talk about menopause. And then I have like the younger ones that are just starting. They're coming in my for a facial treatment and they're like, I don't know what's going on. And I'm breaking out here and I have hairs growing there and I can't sleep and they're stressed out. And, you know, the conversation starts. So I thought, how could I have something for that age group, right? To help them kind of prepare them to what's coming. Some women have no symptoms at all and have a very easy time, but 70 to 85% of us have some sort of symptom or issue going on. So the title, Prepare to Pause, is basically how to prepare for menopause, but also to prepare to pause, as in take a pause in your life, reassess. Because at middle age, we do that, eh? Like we reassess and we, you know, your life is changing, your things are evolving, and we're stressed out creatures by nature. So like prepare your mind, like you're going to retire soon, prepare for that pause. So it has multiple meanings.
Yeah.
But the book, I would say mostly for the premenopausal, perimenopausal women is what it's mainly designed for. But even if you've been postmenopausal for years, there's a big chapter on skin treatments and skincare in there. There's nutrition, there's sleep. Like it covers all of this health and wellness components, even if you've already been through that and are done with your hot flashes. There's still things for women to learn and information to be gained from that. But it was kind of for that age group. And, it's not a serious read. It's a very easy to read. Each chapter is individual. You can pick it up 2 months from now. You don't have to reread. You know what I mean? The story doesn't continue, right? It's individual, kind of self-help sort of format. And yeah, it just kind of evolved into that. So that it was not planned.
Well, a lot of things that we do, particularly midlife, aren't really planned. We just get a hair and we just say, you know what, this is something I'm going to do, and we do it. But that's, Lisette, that's the beauty of midlife, is that we don't need permission to do things. We give ourselves permission, and we have earned that confidence and that privilege to be able to do things that maybe we would not have ever done even 15 years ago.
Exactly. And you gain knowledge and experience with life, right?
Right. Yeah. We've got some credibility that we can share with the world, right? One other question I have for you is, what is one of your key pillars of self-care? And I know you probably have 20.
Oh, but yeah. That's a hard one for me. I guess I would go with nutrition, that being the first chapter of my book, because I feel that if you don't eat well, nothing works well, right? Your brain doesn't function well. Your skin will suffer. Your mood will suffer, because we know that nutrition and mental health is very, very much, you know, integrated in each other. You need to have a balanced diet to have it. So it's the base and the key, I feel, to all the other things. I could say get a massage. Yes, that's great. But if you don't have a healthy diet, so many things that can go wrong or happen to your body over time. So to me, that is something that I feel very strongly about. I'm very, very careful of what I put into my body. It's a non-negotiable for me in my lifestyle. So I feel very strongly about it, and I wish that everybody else would, because there's so many fast food and, you know, processed food that's available, and people have kind of forgotten how to eat the basics, right?
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. And I actually wrote down your quote here, because I'm going to probably post this on something. If you don't eat well, nothing works well. And I think that really kind of ties a bow on it. Lisette, I would love for you to tell listeners where they can find you and find your book.
I am on social media. I actually have two accounts on Instagram. So my aesthetic business one is Dermac Health and Beauty. And then I have a Prepare to Pause Instagram account. So that one's more menopause. It's a little lighter, more less serious, you know, more it's more me, who I am as me, while the other one is more business related with the services I do and things like that. And then my website is dermacaesthetics.com, where my book, you can purchase my book on my website, on Amazon, and also on lulu.com.
Oh, okay.
And I'm also on Facebook under Dermac Aesthetics as well.
All right. That will all go in the show notes. Appreciate the info. And Lisette Manuel, it is wonderful to meet you. And thank you for being on Asking for a Friend.
Likewise. And thank you for having me.
Follow Asking for a Friend on social media outlets and provide a review and share this show wherever you get your podcasts. Reviews and sharing help us grow.